Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
They're welcome to another episode of the Motor City Metrics podcast here at TigersMLReports.com. I am Rahul Gassil. Alongside me is Chris Brown. Just Chris Brown and I this evening, the old show format that was, we did the show alone for what, almost 5 years, 6 years. So
long, long time. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's no Cam and no Youper this evening, but you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, and please rate and review us. It goes a long way. Also, there's a kind of wanted to discuss something real quick before we get to the show. Let me do our sponsor read here by our friends over at, I'm drawing a blank. I know who our sponsor is, but I'm just trying.
Bet Online?
Bet Online, yes. Bet Online is our sponsor. But I'm just trying to find the read because I had it all set. And this is show prep on the fly, and I'm usually a little better prepared than this. Bet Online. If you've been using BetOnline during the tournament, probably hopefully double your paycheck, unlike Shohei Ohtani's agent or his interpreter, which we'll get to that a little later. But BetOnline is your place for all things betting. You can bet spring football, so USFL. If you want to get that betting fix, use the promo code BELEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for 50% welcome deposit bonus. So go to BetOnline, get all your prop bets, all that. They're even with baseball. So BetOnline, your number one place online to all things betting. That was not a really good read. I'm not going to lie, but
it's fine.
Yeah. But I just wanted to say a couple of things real quick. So if you're new to the podcast and you wonder why we ask for donations. So as a YouTube, like we just started making money on YouTube. Not every month we make you money on YouTube. You have to have a certain threshold before you do.
Well, and clarify, what do you mean by making money?
Yeah, okay. So people think because you stream on YouTube, there's like this thing that you make money, but you have to have a certain, you have to have 1,000 subscribers, which we have. They have a certain amount of views and then all that before you hit, you have to hit over $100 to even get paid on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So It takes sometimes like there's good. Don't get me wrong. Our shows are pretty consistent, but the more views we have, the more money we make. It's that simple. We start doing shorts and those things, but YouTube takes a good majority of that money out. It is the price of doing business. So as much as we like to do TikTok and other things, and John was instrumental in getting us on YouTube getting us going on YouTube and those other social media platforms, we're only 3-4 people. So please consider donating. I do write if you donate to our PayPal goes right to us versus the super. I mean, we do get super chat money, but that is also taken on YouTube as well. So it just all these little things we do, the shirts we sell for Tiger Money Report, all that. Everything goes back into the website. Case in point, site renewal comes up in a couple weeks. All the site money we make goes towards those kind of operating costs. The operating costs went to going to Erie, the live looks, which I wrote for Tiger Money Report. So those things all add up and make live, you know, again, I also write for FanSided. I don't make a lot of money doing that. And that just basically keeps. So anyway, just giving you a heads up, I'll behind a sausage and all those things, why we ask for the donations, why it all works that way. So Chris probably can do a better explanation. And we don't like asking people for money, but after a while, like I said, I mean, it's when we've applied certain, you know, freelance gigs, all those things, stuff adds up after a while.
Yeah, no, obviously anything that people can donate or, you know, contribute, participate, anything like that helps. This is not by any means a lifestyle. I guess it's a lifestyle, but we're not making a living off this by any means. But we put in enough work at it that we probably should by all rights. But, I don't know. That's just one of those things. It helps if people can. If not, I understand. But
there was somebody when I was on Erie, there was a parent of a player. I can't say who it was, but I was talking about, we're just making small talk, and I was talking about how the day job's been getting a little busier. That's been nice, and it's been work has been progressively, some of the projects I've been doing getting harder. And he's like, "How's the how's the donations coming?" And I said, "Well, it is what it is, it's not a big deal." And it's like, "Oh, you gotta eat, And he kind of tapped me in the stomach, and I'm like, I hate when people do that. Like, just because I'm a little bigger guy, I understand that. But anyway, that's why goes into why we do it. And we do it because we love doing this, don't get me wrong. And we'll continue to do this as long as one of us until one day it's just like, eh. But
yeah,
it is what it is. We just wanted to emphasize a little bit for people who are brand new to the show. And why we go about, like, for example, I was able to buy polos for some of the guys, like the Tiger Minor, and I'm buying Chris's this week. So all these little things go into what we do, and even, like I said, us be able to clip for that stuff. So, but those, Todd with the comment of the night, there are seedy parts of Erie Raj don't need to be staying in. No, you're right. I stay at the... You know what? I'll just give you guys an example. I stay at the Motel 6 in Erie, Pennsylvania. I've never stayed. I stay within my means. I'm not asking to stay at a 5-star hotel. It'd be nice, but you know what? It is what it is.
We've done the Motel 6 half dozen times now, and every time it's fine. They do it. It's nice and clean. Yeah. It's all we need. We don't need a bar full of $20 nuts, as it were. We did stay at the other hotel the one time, the crime scene hotel, and that we've talked about that numerous times. That was that ended up a little bit rough, but so I don't know. I'm glad Roger was able to make it to Erie. I couldn't this time. Hoping to get there later in the year, but it kind of all depends on what happens with my career situation.
Yeah, and there's it's a good proximity to 190. Absolutely, Todd. But yeah, it does what it's supposed to do. I found a hot dog place there yesterday, Lucky Louie's, and that was an awesome find. Props to our listener up in Canada, Toronto, Corey, who works. He's a color commentator, does boxing commentary. I met him through Twitter a few years ago. He's become a good friend of the show, and he recommended. He said he's coming into town, and he was like, "I'm going to check out this hot dog place." And I looked at where it is. I'm like, "Well, no kidding. It's right down the street from the hotel." And yeah, Lucky Louie's, if you're into good IPAs, good hot dogs, it was one of the best hot dogs I ever had. I had the Yinzer. So it was a pierogi, sausage, French onion chips, whatever you want to call it, sour cream, dirt cheddar. Cheese. And yeah, it was delicious. It was very delicious. And the pretzels. But anyway, again, donate. Great. There's a donation button. They're in the house. Right there, you can click on it. Donate anything you can. If you can, great. Buy a t-shirt. Buy one of these t-shirts. Goes a long way. Again, anything you can do to support the site, we appreciate it. We are totally independent. We don't work for, for fan. If I showed you what I make for Fansided, you'd cringe. So anyway, enough of that. Let's just move on to rain out. So the Tigers were rained out today. Erie was rained out today. Toledo's rained out today. And it looks like that might be the same case tomorrow, too. And West Michigan, too. So Lakeland was the only thing going on today among the Tigers system. And did they end up winning, Chris?
Lakeland won 13-5, I think. It ended up getting – that one got rained out, too, after 7, or they were in the 7th. Yeah, it got a little out of hand later in the game. That was – their starter had a brutal first inning. Lakeland starter walked the first 4 batters he faced, ended up with, I think, 6 walks or 5 walks, a hit batter. Only got one out, but they came back, and I think they hit 4 home runs, including an absolute bomb by Jose De La Cruz, who we've talked before on the minor league side of things. He might have the most raw power in the entire organization. And I still haven't seen a distance on it. Like, it broke Statcast for a little bit, but it was 110 plus miles an hour, and it was 37 degree launch angle. And I was searching, and home runs with those, that launch angle and that exit velocity could have gone anywhere between 390 feet and 504 feet. So I don't quite understand how the physics works on all of that, but yeah, it was a bomb. Dom Johnson hit two home runs. Clayton Campbell hit another home run. He's got two home runs and I think two doubles already this year. So the only one with it today, it wasn't.
Seven iron in his club.
Oh, here's that home run right here for people watching.
De La Cruz crushes it deep to left. That ball is way out of here. Over the berm.
Yeah, holy crap.
Miguel Cabrera territory. Max Clark did not play today. He had the day off. That was planned. I think they said they were going to plan. He's going to have Sunday off as well. I think just it's part of the, you see that with the minors. Most guys only play 5 days a week. But yeah, he's still looking to get his swing going. And then I know that's going to be a topic of discussion for the entire year until it happens. But anyway, yeah, it was a rainy day across all of baseball. There was many games canceled. And then there are a couple of things that went down that, you know, the Mets blew out the Braves, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Royals and Astros.
Yeah, Clayton Campbell's been off to a really good start, by the way. I was looking at some of his numbers, Chris. It looks like he is finding, it's not just, he's not getting cheapies by any stretch of the imagination.
No, he's gone. I think he hit his first home run was the opposite field home run, I think. And this one he pulled, and he's gone. He's using the whole field. It's an interesting player because he plays third base, I think, first base, catcher, DH, and I'm not sure if he's projects well to any of them, honestly. But he's hitting, and it's a fun profile because he's from New Zealand, which I don't believe there's been a big leaguer from New Zealand. I may have to look into that, but
maybe it might be a pitcher. It sounds like maybe a pitcher, but I don't think I want to say that maybe a pitcher. Yeah, I'll have to look that up. But yeah, Max Clark is going to be the topic of the session too. I do want, you know what, Todd brings up a good point here, and that's a lot of early season Angel Hernandez hate, but for good reasons. I mean, the guy's makes Cuban Americans look, I mean, he's he makes us look bad. Seriously. I know what he sees half the time, but anyway. Hello to everybody who is welcoming the channel there. Noah, by the way, I did see Paul Skeens last year at Erie, and I think they might schedule, if they cancel tomorrow, assuming they're going to probably put him in a doubleheader Saturday, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, they have, he was supposed to pitch today, right? Against Toledo, and they did, they scheduled a doubleheader for Saturday, and right now I think Quinn Priester is still scheduled to go tomorrow. I don't know if they would just bump Priester the next day. I haven't seen that, so it's possible he could pitch tomorrow in Toledo. It's possible he'd pitch Saturday. That'll be fun to watch.
That will be a lot of fun to watch, especially because the Indians themselves have former Tiger Willie Peralta on there. I didn't see that. I saw that the other day. But no, the Skeens is, the guy's got a lively arm, and I think he's one of those things where I think, I'm not trying to say he's going to be like a shooting comet kind of thing, but I think I have a feeling that based off his arm, based on his velocity,
He is considered by most to be the best pitching prospect in baseball right now, and you can see why when you watch him pitch. It's pretty ridiculous. So yeah, I think he'll be in the big leagues within the next 2 months easily. He's just gonna build up his arm right now. I think he's probably gonna throw 3-4 inning stops.
Yeah, it's gonna be one of those things where you might be. I'm wondering going forward if we're gonna see more relievers like that with like the 3-inning relievers kind of thing going, where the Tigers are talking about using Wilmer Flores that way. Right now, by the way, I totally forgot about this. Good call there, D-Man. Michigan is playing in the Frozen Four against Boston College, I want to say. And the winner of that
sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, and the winner of that gets either Denver or Boston. So the road to the championship is through Boston.
That sounds either, right, you know.
Or Denver, but either way.
Traditional hockey powerhouses out of Boston.
Oh, yeah. Denver's kind of a, I guess they've been powerhouse, but anywho.
Yeah.
But let's take a look around the minors too, because we do have a couple people that are Max Anderson has been hitting the tar out of the ball too. He's hitting over 500 for sample size. But I've been like that home run you posted yesterday, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
That was opposite field.
It was. I think there was a pretty strong wind blowing out, but still okay. To get it up there in the the opposite field, and it looked pretty effortless. It'll be interesting to see what kind of swing he has, throughout the course of the season. But yeah, he's early on, at least, he does not seem to be struggling with high A pitching in the slightest, which is a good sign to see, right? He's a guy who has to hit because it's kind of a not quite bottom of the scale defense profile, but he's probably second base, first base. So yeah, hitting is good, and he's off to a nice start. So that was, it's fun to see that one for sure.
Especially when you need, this is a guy who led the Big Ten in hitting. So one of the things that I was hearing yesterday was if the Tigers weren't getting a guy that led the Big Ten in hitting can hit, you'd have to kind of wonder about their draft profile. But yeah, this looks, great, Chris, a little wind driven, but still, swing looks pretty good.
Yeah, and he's been getting a number of hits to the opposite field. I think that might be kind of his profile, which is a great way to hit for average for sure. It's we've seen Justice Bigby did that, and Brady Allen also hits the opposite field a fair amount and was able to get close to 20 home runs, which is kind of tough. But if he can pull the ball a little bit more, then yeah, he'll be very interesting. Probably move up in our prospect rankings if he keeps producing.
Yeah, and Rosenio will probably be within the top 10. He's not a top 10, is he?
No, we talked about this before. Like, we were relatively early on him, but also relatively
conservative, cautious,
I guess. Yeah, conservative is a way to say. I think he's 18th on our list, but we did that in December, November, and then he kind of had an awesome spring training and was getting raves, and so far he's off to a great start. It's no extra base hits yet, although he definitely had one that should have been. He had a 385-foot hit off the top of the wall that Max Clark I apparently thought was going to get caught, or I don't know exactly what happened. He didn't see, but so Max Clark got a really late jump on it and then tried to make it to third. It's one of those like early baseball lessons, right? Like, if you screw up, don't compound it by screwing up again. So he got a bad read and then tried to push it because he felt bad about it and got thrown out at third, and that was even worse. But Briseño, I think five walks to one strikeout, really low swinging and miss rate. And I've watched all these games, and it seems like there'll be times where it doesn't even seem like he's hitting the ball hard, and then you go look and it's like 105. Like every time, he's 95 plus every time. And so if he just starts getting that ball up in the air a little bit more, he's going to hit a bunch of home runs. So yeah, definitely exciting prospect there. He's another guy that I've only seen him catch twice now. It doesn't really stand out as being particularly good or bad. And his hands look okay at first. He did have a grounder to him the other day, but that happens. But yeah, definitely a guy that's up arrow there.
I think that's a difference because, one thing I was thinking about is what's the difference between him and Roberto Campos at the same time in Lakeland? Mm-hmm. And I had to think about that because somebody I was actually talking about that with Jason Beck yesterday. I saw Jason Beck and Erie, and we were just making some small talk about that. And I just thought, it was a really good question. Like, damn, what is the difference between him and Briseño? Because Campos had the same kind of like profile, right? With a lot of stuff on the ground, right?
Yeah, and Campos hit the ball really hard. The big, big difference to me is Briseño's plate discipline, his approach. Is much more advanced than Campos. Campos
a lot of three like a lot of deep counts too, right?
Yeah, and Briseño will foul off pitches that he gets to and just work, and he's already had like multiple 8-9 pitch at bats this season. And Campos just wasn't that kind of hitter. He had decent plate discipline in low A. I want to say he walked 7-8% of the time and didn't strike out a ton. But we've seen once he got to West Michigan, it became harder for him to lay off borderline pitches or foul them off. And so he was putting like weak contact on breaking balls away and stuff like that. So just the adjustments there. And you know, it's every jump up a level is a new challenge. But I talked before, I think Briseño's approach is too good for the level he's at right now. There's not enough strikes being thrown to really test, because there are some minor concerns. You heard from some people that scouts are a little bit worried that it's more strength over bat speed, which can come back to once you really start finding guys who are pumping 95 plus and putting it where they want to. Guys who don't have that elite bat speed or that even, you know, above average bat speed and rely on strength, they can get blown away by that. So that's something we may need to keep an eye out for down the road. For right now, I think everybody's right to be a little bit excited about this kid because they get that combination of hard contact and plate discipline.
And you got to look at it this way too, Chris. One of the things that I would be concerned with is when he's going to get called up. If he gets a call to high A, let's say it's later in the year, you know, you might see some arms at that point, maybe college draft arms, and kind of perhaps you can go. So for example, if you got called up, let's say in May or June, that's prime. You still have a lot of those arms that are still not called up to AA yet. Mm-hmm. If he gets called up in like late July, September, August, see, that's the thing. Like, it really depends to me. I don't know about you, but it depends to me when he's going to get called up, where he'll get a true challenge like that. Because he also will run into the occasional, Lansing lefty or any team that has a junk ball lefty who can throw 85 miles an hour, but just can place it anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, those are unique challenges in their own right. But yeah, that's a good point. That the way seasons work, sometimes it's almost like half seasons, right? And actually, the standings are like that, where you may be basically, you might get promoted, but you're facing a lot of the same pitchers. I guess the hope is that, you know, fewer of the bad pitchers get promoted, right? So you're a top 20 percentile hitter in low A, and the top 20 percentile pitchers also join you. But, the rest of the pitchers up at high A are better than the 80% of the pitchers you saw in low A, if that makes any sense, you know? So you hope it's a different challenge there, but yeah, it's, I would think if he keeps playing the way he is right now, and depending how much they really want him to focus on defense at catcher, I think he'll be up in West Michigan by the midpoint of the season for sure. Just based on what I've seen so far. I mean, he could have, I think I talked about it, he could have 40 walks and 10 strikeouts by that time, which is, you know, it's time to move up.
And it really depends too what happens with the Tigers right now with Alfonso and Steven Scott. The reason why I mentioned that too is because it kind of segues into what I saw in Erie. Alfonso with two hits, an opening night, including a blast to right. And talking to Gabe Alvarez, and just talking overall with the staff in general, that Scott's been a really good addition. He's already been a clubhouse presence in there, and that's a nice mix of having, you know, you have Alfonso being the young guy and Scott being the minor league veteran, that allows, I think, Alfonso to really kind of, that home run he hit was a pretty good hit too, and they weren't doing much against Blade Tidwell. Tidwell looked pretty damn good, and he was able to win. He wasn't throwing, like, he was pretty under control until later, and then he started getting a little wild. But still, the biggest takeaway that I had from all that was Hugh Lee, and get to see him in person. He, through his interpreter, was talking about how he hunts for fastballs and how he's just trying right now. And he had, like, about at least, I want to say, 3 or 4 at-bats during the whole two games I saw him, where it was, like, at least 6 or 7 just lengthy at-bats. And he was working the count really well. And I thought that he did it, and even on the base pass too, his aggression and just, he's a smart player. And I see what the Tigers did a really good job of doing their homework on this guy.
Yeah, he's a different kind of plate discipline guy. Like, I don't think he's taken a walk yet, but he's not striking out a ton. And like you said, he's up there battling. And I think that the walks will come. You know, he's one of the few guys that's really being challenged, I think. Right, they bumped him up. I didn't think that they would do that, and he's more than holding his own. So that's definitely impressive to see. And he does. I did kind of like the answers he gave, where, you know, yeah, he's like you said, he's just hunting fastballs and trying to get himself into counts where he can get the fastball. And what's interesting about that is that was like one of the main criticisms of him, I think, in Fangraphs, you know, Tigers prospect list, was that he had hit something like 190 against fastballs of decent velocity. So I don't know if he's worked on that. He also talked about working to be a little bit more agile, right?
Yeah, correct. He's trying to make his posture better, as a better, like, to when he's running the base pass, which makes kind of sense. And he was working on it a little leaner because he thought it was getting a little chunky.
Yeah, I mean, he's a thicker kid. I don't know if he's ever going to be super lean, but it's nice. It's an athletic build still. So, yeah, I don't know. I see we got a whole bunch of questions there on the side. I don't know if we want to answer them one by one.
Yeah. So Deadly Ninja wants to know, is the Tigers trying to teach a system-wide approach to sit fastball, see a lot of pitches? There's been some. I don't know. That's very – I've got more intel about the pitching versus the hitting, but there's been some – discussion, but I'm not exactly sure what they're doing. So when they come to the plate, but I think it's also depending on the individual and working on exactly what their strengths are.
Yeah, no, I think that they're treating, you know, they have individualized plans for every single player in the system, and I think they're treating swings a lot like they treat like sort of natural pitch movement or spin, things like that. Like, they're going to lean into whatever you're good at. And so like Chase Young is actually done a fair amount of damage in the air to the opposite field, but he's a pretty, you know, dead pull hitter for the most part. So they're not going to make him, you know, try to work the middle of the field the way the old development staff might have. And the opposite is with Justice Bigby, right, where he hits everything to the opposite field, but he hits it really hard. So they want him to pull the ball a little bit more, but they're not going to, you know, tell him, oh, you have to do this. This is the way we need to hit. So I think they're just leaning into guys' particular tendencies. I do think that in terms of the approach, I do think they want guys to work at bats and, you know, hunt the pitches that they can drive. But that, I don't think that's, I don't know if, I'm sure they have specific, like, you know, trade secret types of stuff that they're doing to try to encourage that. But that's not, I mean, that's the approach everybody wants, right? That's every team in baseball. Like, hey, wait for your pitch, drive, don't expand the zone. There's not a whole lot more to hitting, I don't think.
Yeah, especially because, I mean, the one thing about Urie's offense this year, it's going to be either feast or famine. I mean, the first game was 2-0, and they didn't really get anything. It was just a lot of they strung together, took advantage of some wild pitches, and then yesterday they scored only 3 runs, and they had 11 hits, only scored 3 runs and lost. Mm-hmm. So that was just a lot of times where they're going to struggle with runners in scoring position. But overall, I think that another takeaway that I had too was, as far as like Chris Myers goes is concerned too, if he struggles a little bit, you're going to have to wonder where the pop is going to come from. I mean, Lee is going to be a good example of that, but Holton, I mean, there's a couple times he squared the ball yesterday pretty well, and he's still there, but now you have Corey Joyce now in Andrew Navigato in Toledo with all the injuries, and we'll get to Toledo here in a second, but that kind of kills any type of like getting a consistent bat when something goes. I mean, if they couple another infielder from West Michigan.
Well, I mean, you're hoping that Brady Allen, you know, he's off to a rough start. He's struggling in Double-A. That's not unusual. We saw the same sort of thing with some other players, but he was a guy that offered some power, and he certainly has the enough power to hit a bunch of home runs in Erie. He just needs to make more contact. You know, he got his first hit the other day, but been a lot of strikeouts so far. Be waiting on that. I agree. You know, Holton has never been a big power guy. He's got power, but he's more on base and line drives. And then, you know, Luis Santana, who just got called up, went on an absolute bender at the end of last year, pulling the ball off the wall and left. But that's not a guy you really want to rely on for power. So I think you're right. Gage Workman has plenty of power, but again, the hitting ability. So they're just going to have to, I think they may have to be a little bit more aggressive on the base paths this year. A lot of more steals, more small ball, if you will. I know they don't really want they don't do that in the organization as much, but they may have to if they want to win some games this year.
And that's kind of what they happened too. They had a lot of runners in motion. I mean, there was a couple steals there by Lee, so you're going to see more of that probably going forward with Erie, because Gabe Alvarez knows that they're kind of limited on what they have. So let's go into our first segment of the day, and that is our Inside the Numbers.
All
By the way, we did get a donation just now, so thank you so much to David. Thank you. We appreciate the donation. Much appreciated. Thank you. So, Chris, what is your insider number this week?
In this one, yeah, it's a little bit of a hat tip to Cameron, who's been, I think, been the one kind of tweeting this out from the Motor City Metrics account, unless it was you. It's 12, and that is the defensive run save for the Tigers as a team this year, which ranks first in baseball. You know, it's early. Obviously, in defensive stats are always a little bit funky, but they're one of three teams in double digits, I believe, or maybe just two. And it's not really that hard to believe right now. You know, they've just been playing really solid defense, and I wasn't the only one talking about it the other day, that they won that game against Pittsburgh basically because their defense kept them in it. They had two really good catches from Matt Vierling in the outfield. Riley Green stole a home run. Colt Keith with an awesome, like, whirling throw to second base. Javi Baez made a great diving stop. They were catching the ball, and they've been doing it all year. And you can see right now, for individual players, Riley Green is plus four defensive run save right now, which is tied for the second most in all of baseball. Carson Kelly, Parker Meadows, Colt Keith, and Matt Vierling are all plus two, and Baez and Ibanez are plus one. The only negatives they have right now are McKinstry, Rogers, Olsen, and Torkelson are all minus one. So doing a really good job of run prevention, as it were. And so that's nice to see.
Nice. By the way, the Wings tied up the game right now, and I'm not sure the playoff indications of this. Are they still in the top place?
They are. I think that the win basically went out. They're playing the Penguins right now, which is nice. But and by the way, the worst team in defensive run saved is the Chicago Cubs at negative 10. So anyway, I know there's some other sports going on right now. Apparently, it's a real hockey night in America, as it were.
The Molson Hockey Night in Canada theme song is one of the best. It's one of my favorites of all time. It's a fantastic song. I don't want to get too carried away with hockey. That and also the NHL 94 music, too.
Fantastic. Well, it was nice if you were, if you didn't have cable, like I did when I was growing up. We got four channels, right? You got 2, 4, 7, and 9, wasn't it? Was that CBC? So, Anyway, what's your inside the number?
Yeah, that's my inside number. Sorry, I was recovering from Detroit Tiger fan burning so badly because I was multitasking badly. Yeah, I admittedly stumbled, jackass. All right, so my inside number is 183 and 142 and 40.7. So that is the losing bets of nearly 183 million, winning bets of more than 142 million, and 40.7 million in losses. And that is from Shohei Ohtani's interpreter.
Interpreter, please. Yeah, the money values are absolutely staggering here. It like strains credulity that somehow nobody noticed this. Nobody noticed that he was moving hundreds of millions of dollars in bets. And they were, what did they say? They said there were 19,000 bets over a span of fewer than 800 days. It was basically one bet every hour for 2+ years. The guy had a problem, and I know that there are a lot of conspiracy theories about, like, hey, Ohtani must have been in on this, right? But, like, I don't see a situation where the federal government, because this is a federal indictment, isn't it? It's the
correct.
I don't think they would particularly care about protecting Ohtani, right? Yeah. Well, I mean, Javi Baez comment. Yeah, it's just remarkable that this happened, and they've got evidence that he was calling up and pretending to be Ohtani, and just a kind of a cautionary tale here, because one thing I did see was that none of his agencies, none of Ohtani's agencies or his accountants or anything, none of those companies had somebody who spoke Japanese. So there was nobody there to, like, double check and say, hey, is this actually him? Is this right? Like, they just didn't have somebody to speak Japanese. So, just a failure on multiple levels.
And you know what? So, I mean, he was his training partner, his business partner, his chauffeur, but, like, that was his best friend. And Ohtani's kind of like a reclusive kind of guy. And so he took advantage of the whole situation. I mean, it's just that, to me, that's what looks like on the surface. Again, whether Ohtani bet on himself or not. I mean, I don't know. Like, I just, to me, it doesn't, the fact they that people it. Already, the conspiracy that Ohtani was gambling on himself is, I mean, come on.
Yeah. There was the, you know, they said in the, you know, the statement that came out or whatever, that there doesn't appear to be any evidence that there were baseball was bet on, which is kind of wild. You would think that this dude is such a degenerate gambler that he would have bet on baseball too, but somehow he knew not to. I don't know. But it's, you know, it's a pastime in America, is to build people up, right? And then, you know, revel when they fall. That's something that you've talked about a little bit. And then,
or, you know,
then
when people stumble over the words like they just did now, like myself.
Well, or you, but you know, they build you up and then they like to see you fail. And then,
yeah.
And then the, what's better than that is the redemption story. That's the final arc of that. They're like, oh, he was on top of the mountain and then, yeah, you know, smuggled 16 orphans across the border and went to prison for 8 years. And he's come back and now he's back climbing mountains again. That's just what we like as people. So there are a lot of people, I think, who want to see Ohtani involved in this just because, you know, he gets so much praise. And there are other people, I don't know. I think it's a huge bummer for baseball if he was involved in this. And so far, at least the evidence is pointing that he's not. But I don't know. It is awfully fishy with so much money moving around.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where there's a, I think that to me, what reeks about this whole thing is that you're looking at people, like, I'm glad that people are, or the government's recognizing that he is a victim of this whole thing, but the automatically assume, well, why would you gamble so much money? What, or, there's no way, how does he, if you trust somebody like that, you know, why not? You know, those, that to me is how much money those guys, Ohtani's made through endorsements. Mm-hmm. It's not like he has, like, I don't know, like, it's just to make the assumption that, I mean, we were joking around about it, but at the back of my mind, going, I don't just see Ohtani just betting on himself that much. You have to have a rule, you know, but the, I don't know, man.
And you know what's wild about it to me, and I don't know, I mean, who knows? Like, it, you know, when they traveled to states where sports betting is legal, I mean, I'm sure they could track all this down, but like, if Ohtani had been based out of Michigan, which would have been nice for Tigers fans, of course, I wonder if this ever would have been found out, right? Because this is because they found they busted the illegal bookie, right? The illegal sports betting operation in California, that's not legal yet. So I don't know. It's just kind of wild. Yeah, I know Ohtani is continuing to play baseball, and I don't think he's off to a terribly strong start, but I guess I don't blame him after what's going on. Also, he's got a wife now, so she's probably like, why did you let him take all that money? Theoretically.
No, in theory, though. I'm glad, though, as Samuel said in the chat, the Feds cleared him, so it's good enough for me. Not everything is a conspiracy. Or, I mean, because everything you remember in this country, if it's a conspiracy, then you add the word gate at the end of it. So, because that's what we do. It's so lazy. Since Watergate was a hotel, for whatever reason, when you have a conspiracy, it's fill in the blank gate. So, Ohtani gate or what, you know, like, it just seems like to be like the lazy discourse to do with things. So,
yeah. And as I said, Ohtani is struggling to a .333 average with 3 home runs right now. He's got a 171 WRC plus. So, I guess it doesn't seem to be bothering him too much. So never mind.
Yeah.
He's just,
meanwhile, fine. I mean, you talk about historic, and we're going to talk about the Royals and Guardians offense here. The Dodgers offense is not too bad of a, not too badly themselves.
Yeah.
So I find it kind of strange how it goes to show as athletes, how we can really, how athletes can focus and put deep, what's the word I'm looking for? Decompartmentalize things a little bit.
Yeah. Decompartmentalize. Yeah. Just, or compartmentalize, I guess is what they're doing. Yeah, they're like putting his private life. He doesn't, I don't know. We talked about it before. Like, I think that Ohtani might just be a huge baseball weirdo who only thinks about baseball at all times and lets everybody else handle everything for him. And he, unfortunately, apparently was way too trusting of the wrong kind of guy. Which sucks.
Yeah. And it, yeah. And, but there's an article too, how he, some senators looking into how Otani is trying to avoid paying taxes in California. Well, anybody living in California is trying to avoid paying taxes because I mean, yeah, I guess taxes are ridiculous.
Yeah. There, well, you know, I mean, there, I'm sure every millionaire in California is trying to avoid paying the taxes there. And every politician who wants to make a name for himself or herself is, you know, goes after somebody famous for it, because that's how you build up your credibility and your Q rating.
Well, it makes a lot of sense. Well, it makes sense because there's a lot of, interesting enough, in Montana, not to get too sidetracked real quick, but there's a lot of celebrities that took over. So, for example, in Bozeman, Montana, the only reason I know this is because for my day job, the average Taco Bell employee, like the average income to live in Bozeman now, I think it's Bozeman, $90,000. Like they had to pay Taco Bell employees like somewhere in the neighborhood of like $25-$30 an hour to stay competitive, because all the millionaires live up there and they've kind of compounded themselves in there and they've driven up the cost of like the tax value so insanely high. Crazy.
I've heard similar things about Bentonville, Arkansas. Not necessarily celebrities, but because that's where
Walmart?
Because of Walmart, that like Bentonville itself is like Austin, Texas, almost, where it's like super like freaky and liberal, and the rest of Arkansas is like, what are those guys doing down there?
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.